The daughter's friend.
No.
So the mom that watched the daughter went.
Penrose has disrupted everything.
Again?
He said something about his, yeah, his daughter's friend.
Oh, remote one, no, is all he taxing it? Are we taxing it? Are we taxing it? I didn't say a word. What, the tax? Still, as of today. You know they got another budget coming. It might be legal. They're taxing.
Let's figure out what it is.
What are we talking about? Can we get this cleared up? Oh, we'll get this cleared up on this.
You didn't start the TV, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. Okay, ladies, we need to start.
This is Councilman Bill.
Okay, I'm done.
Oh, my God, are you sure?
And we have Council President Chris Bullock, Councilwoman Kirkpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Co-Chair Councilman Packett, Penrose Holland, George Smiley, hi George, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Miller, and I believe Councilman Street is not going to be here, Councilman Weiner is not going to be here, and my aide Christian Roberts, and I'm Joe Redder, and Councilman Powers is absent. Okay, what's pleasure on minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second.
In favor?
Aye.
John, you want something?
Yeah, I couldn't count from the bell.
Yes, I said that.
And neither's Mickey or me.
He's with Mickey.
Or Goofy.
Yes.
More like Goofy.
George, did you say you wanted to do a presentation or something?
As a development coordinator.
Okay.
Shock coordinator, is that a new position?
That's a new position that you approved that I came here and spoke about.
Yes.
Still doing double duties.
Oh, that's the one we're unfunded next Tuesday.
I can ask you serious questions. Are you ready for it?
Wrong meeting.
Your nickel.
Where did Jim go for the PowerPoint, I wonder?
Yeah. Just hit next.
Is there a clicker, Dina?
You can talk, right?
It's above his pay grade.
You can talk if you want.
Is there a clicker there?
There we go. All right, so this is the record plan for Boyd's Corner Farm.
Say your name.
Brad Shockley, Land Use. Again, it's the record plan approval for Boyd's Corner Farm. The property is south of Boyd's Corner Road, just west of Route 13. And as you can see, going back to 2008, this particular property's had a somewhat historic review through our process. This is a copy of the initial submission in 2008. It was initially a rezoning from S to ST and CR. As you can see, it was for about 134,000 square feet of retail space, 124 townhouses, and 225 apartments. And that application actually expired in 2009. So the follow-up application was submitted in 2011. Again, it was a rezoning from S to ST and CR. The proposal for apartments and townhomes was dropped, and they're proposed at that point 116 single-family dwelling units and a little over 146,000 square feet of retail space. And the rezoning was approved by council in 2012. So the record plan was revised slightly since council approved the rezoning in 2012. This is a copy of the record plan that's in front of you today. The retail and office space was reduced slightly down to a little over 111,000 square feet. Three units were dropped, bringing the total to 113 units. The traffic's being addressed by the Southern Newcastle County Transportation Improvement District. And you can see there's three changes that really resulted in the loss of square footage and units. On the west side of the site, they added an interconnection to a property that's just going through our process, the Baker Farm. It's at an exploratory stage. And at the southern end of the commercial piece, there was some parking eliminated, and they did a redesign of the entrance to kind of create more of a boulevard-like feel as you enter the site. The property is subject to a TDR. They transferred 30 units in from a property on Churchtown Road. That's the picture on the left. And then they also transferred in WRPA rights from a property on the west side of Summit Bridge Road, just south of Boyd's Corner Road. And I had a slide for Councilman Weiner, but he's not here. You could, in theory, walk to a dark site, but I wouldn't recommend it. So that's all I have. I know George is here. I'm here if you have any questions. The applicant's here.
Okay. Any questions? John?
Can we go back to the site plan as submitted for approval?
Be the color slider. Yep. Yeah.
So people can walk out of this neighborhood and take advantage of the commercial without any issues.
Correct. It's vehicular and pedestrian connections.
And the pedestrian connection is accessed along the road on the top, and then you enter into the shopping center. There's nothing through the neighborhood into the...
The small building that you're seeing on the north side of the slide, kind of in the center, that's a bank.
Yeah.
So that's the main entrance into the, a secondary entrance into the subdivision. But yes, you can access the commercial piece from that without going back out on Boyd's Corner Road.
That's a well-designed ability for pedestrians to not necessarily have to get in the car to get in some amenity retail. What type of retail are we planning in the commercial piece?
I'd have to defer to the applicant.
Okay. I like the boulevard entrance too. That looks really attractive.
Any other questions? Okay. Councilman Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you explain to me a little bit more about the TDR and the other transfer? Because last year when we were discussing the affordable housing legislation, there was a big push to adopt or make part of that TDR plan. And then I heard that we already have TDR. So I'm really at a loss as to how the TDR is working, where in fact the transfer is coming from, where's the receiver? I guess the receiver is here, and where's
the... Reed, if you can just go back.
And
go.
When do we... Have we been doing this on a regular basis, or what is the TDR program that, some people in particular says, well, we don't have a TDR program. You got to have a TDR program as part of the affordable housing plan. And then I've heard, well, we've done TDRs. Well, where are we, and what is the TDR program?
Okay.
Where's the receiving area, and where's the...
Sending area,
yes, thank you.
So George Haggard, the Land Use Department. So these two sites here, the two projects where they took the development rights off of this project and transferred them to the project that you're going to be, that's in front of you today.
Right, and where is it coming from? Where's this, so to your right, yeah.
This community, this area here has all been outlined as areas where the development rights come off of. So there's a restriction on this
area.
Now, they can't build. Essentially, all they did was protect this and send the development units to a different place.
Right. And just exactly where is this? Crossland and Boyd?
This is about, I'd say, a mile and a half, 2 miles away. Maybe just a little post. So here's Boyd's Corner Road. This is 896. This is the Mount Pleasant. Used to be grain towers there. Folks remember those?
Yeah.
So they're coming down here. This community is over this way, some off of Boyd's Corner Road. Pull her out if you can see over me. That's where that one is. And they also took a few environmental rights out of here as well and transferred them. So essentially what they do is say you can build no more here, and you took that ability to build and put it in the other project.
And it's 2 miles from descending to the receiving?
Yeah.
That's pretty ridiculous. But anyway.
Ridiculous in what respect?
To be that close, to have a sending area and a receiving area within that proximity.
By state law, these are all in planning districts, so you got to keep all your transfers in the planning district itself. That's the only qualifier, the only qualification to it. In other words, you couldn't take this area here and send it north of the canal.
Okay.
Send it up to Brandywine 100 or something like that. But
and George, in that case, they're actually transferring the resource rights, so it probably makes a little more sense for the properties to be in a closer proximity.
And that's the other piece of it. There are, most of the area south of the canal has very good recharge facilities and capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So what you wind up doing is now there are percentages requirements for those to take to, in other words, there's a 20% threshold that says if I can do a pervious cover up to 20%. 20% is believed that there's going to be no impact on the watershed. You can go up to 50% with an environmental assessment report from the department looking at what they're doing and how they're doing it to make sure that water gets back into the ground. And you can go beyond 50% through the RIPTAC board adjustment variance and then into, you know, a note on the plan requiring that. And they have specialized facilities that are built, required to be built, have a water management plan attached to them. Essentially, what you would be looking at is you take this parcel, and you take the other parcel, and you say, how much water can get into the ground? As it was, after you put that impervious cover on. And they have to make sure that water gets back into the ground at the same level, the same amount, or greater than, and most all of them are greater than. We've got a really good history, 20-year history of checking these things with monitoring wells and stuff, and from an environmental standpoint, it works really well.
Okay.
And essentially, all of this area is south of the canals in the Potomac Aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this area is going to, whether I recharge it here or whether I recharge it there, I'm getting all the water back into the same aquifer along the way. So they were a little bit shy, so they went over to, this is now the Maryland line, same road. So it comes up. Comes across right here. They secured this parcel when they transferred some more water rights, environmental rights for that. I don't think they transferred now. They transferred 30 units into the conservation office.
So what is the other benefit to the sending area other than you don't have the density there? Is there any financial exchange between?
Well, you have to buy this. I think that, you may have already owned this.
So it was the same owner? The owner.
I think this was owned by the same person.
Okay.
You should ask the applicant that, but I'm fairly sure. Brad, you know.
Part of it was controlled by the
owner. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was an additional piece of this that was protected. So this piece and this piece now are protected from the development. And that development capacity has been moved to the plan that's in front of you today. In two ways, in units, number of units that they could do, and in protected resources. So that's how it works.
So we've had for some time the TDR program.
We've had for some time the TDR program. It's not the most efficient.
Maybe been used three times, I want to say.
But it is
three or four.
Okay.
For folks to use.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, we have Councilman Street joined us. Councilman.
Okay, so these are two different parcels. That one, the developer purchased to get the development rights for those 30 units. This one, the developer may have already owned. When I take this back to farmland preservation, when we purchase a farm for the easement, kind of go in circles here, I think, but why would we be purchasing a farm if somebody that wanted to preserve their farm could just sell the TDRs to a developer at some point? Why are we putting money into farmland preservation if a farmer really wants to preserve their land? Why wouldn't they just say, hey, I'm going to sell my TDRs and I'm never going to develop on this land? Wouldn't that preserve their land just as well?
It could.
Yeah.
But it's no guarantee that it will, because the farmer has to be willing, you know, to do that. If he's not willing to do that, and if it's a
high-valued environmental protection area or area that we do not, we're trying to get away from developing, then you would want, you want to be able to drive the bus as opposed to riding the bus necessarily. That would be...
But somebody could still keep their land and farm it, but sell their TDRs.
Somebody could do that, yes. So I did that. Somebody sold this,
right.
Sold their TDRs. He bought, I think he actually bought this and then put a conservation easement on. Mm-hmm. But he owns it. Mm-hmm. And I think we left him with one house.
Correct.
That he could own.
So he could, it could be a primary residence.
It could be one primary residence. I think this is that's 24 parcel. Mm-hmm. It's a larger parcel. This was actually got even more of a storied conversation with it as well, because he owned this. And this just happens to be, I think, where 301 is going as well. Mm-hmm. So then he sold it to DelDOT, and then DelDOT agreed to honor the conservation easement and protect the land. So they have two choices with that. They can protect it, or they can find another piece and substitute that piece for it. The idea for us is to make sure that there's a mathematical formula for how many dwelling units you can have on a parcel. You can increase that if you bring additional development units in, and there's a mathematical formula for environmental protections, and you can increase it on one if you protect it on another.
This is actually the first, and maybe I just missed something, but this is the first plan that I ever remember coming before us showing that somebody was using TDRs in the development.
Well, actually, you have a plan. I don't know whether for sure, because I'm always poor on where the district lines are, but the newspaper up on 7.
Community News.
Community News actually transferred some environmental rights in order to be able to build there. They were like, they're called like-kind transfers. So they protected, I think, about a 2-acre parcel someplace else. And
41. On Route 41.
On Route 41. They protected a bunch of land someplace else.
And I understand that it has happened, but I think what I'm saying is that this is the first time I have ever heard it in part of the discussion on a plan that's coming before us. This is the first time that I've ever actually heard anybody bring that into the conversation.
So I'll give you one more component of this one. They actually transfer some development rights, I believe, out of this one to a project called Crosslands and Canal View. They took some of these rights and moved them over there. As we were adding all the numbers up, that's when we realized that there was a 30-unit deficit. We had to bring those.
And are you, as a department, keeping track of this? You are the...
There's an agreement. Yeah, there's a recorded instrument that identifies this transaction taking place. I mean, John, I think...
But are you banking? Are you banking anything?
Do you There's have nothing people? Here to bank.
No,
it's
no,
used.
Not, but just in general, if somebody says, hey, I'm going to be doing this, are you keeping track of this, or are we just flagging the parcels that have given away their rights?
To my knowledge, the department has not been involved in assigning or collecting development rights. The land, or I think the law department may have done some of that along the way. We have not necessarily done that yet. And every transaction that I know of, my 16 years, is that the only ones that have happened have been really direct transfers. You know, from one parcel to the next parcel, and one parcel gets covered up with a conservation easement, the other parcel uses the rights.
So it's basically a private
deal. It's a private
deal that's going on.
Yeah.
Because we know a couple months ago we heard about some farms that had been purchased under farmland preservation, and they were also given developed TDRs so that they can either build on, I presume, or sell those rights. So we have to have a bank somewhere. So it's probably about 80 that I know.
Okay. I haven't personally been involved in it, so to give you to answer your question, I expect an answer.
Okay. But at some point we probably should get that answer.
That's a great question.
Councilwoman Dillard?
Yeah, I was going to follow up and say what we really should have is a presentation on the planning districts and the anticipated TDRs in the district. Because, so for example, the ones that were, what is it, Crossland?
Crossland
Canal. All of this stuff, when you say planning district, this is a couple of miles away from the Woods Corner development, but the other one might be 4 or 5 miles away. So, do we have planning districts already mapped out that we can take a look at?
You're going to blow the canal one planning district.
That's one planning district. Okay. All right. Okay.
Councilman Cartier?
So looking at the 25-acre parcel, which is now placed in conservation easement, they transferred out 30 units, which is added density to this plan that we're looking at. And I don't recall hearing it as I was thinking this through. That property owner was paid, was there a value placed on each?
It's a private transaction. I know that they secured it, that they give it to us in a legal document saying these are the transfer development rights. We agree that that's the amount of units
okay.
that are available, and we record that document.
So that becomes additional density for the project that we have under this.
Well, it becomes, we call it bonus density, it becomes additional density.
Additional density.
The other project can use.
The
Woods Corner Farm, the one that you have in front of is
paid for that additional density.
Yes.
We don't set it. There's no public.
We don't get in the transaction.
How do we calculate that it was worth 30 units? Is that what the base density would allow for that?
Because their engineer, Dev Sitterace, would do a site calculation for us, submit it to us, we would review it, we would agree or disagree on the amount of units that were available should somebody decide that they wanted to build here. Under the zoning that's there.
Okay.
We would take those units, we would agree on that, reconcile that deal, and then have the transfer take place.
Kathleen?
A little off the subject here, but if we would decide that we were going to put together a farmland preservation program that had different aspects to it, we could put into preservation somebody's farm that wanted to preserve it, but then allow them to sell privately X number of rights. We would still be preserving the land, and it would be permanently preserved if that was the program that they went into. We'd have to set up a program. But if that was the program that conceivably could work, that we could permanently say, your farm has an easement over it.
Is that them agreeing to it or not agreeing?
With them agreeing to it. They would have to come to us and say, yeah, I want to preserve my farm, but rather than us paying them money, we would record the preservation, but then they privately would be allowed to sell their TDRs to somebody else. So we would be preserving it permanently, but not putting any money into it.
If that was how you constructed the law, that's possible.
Yeah.
You'd have to construct the law.
Correct.
Having set at 3 state level runs to try to get a statewide TDR in place and Washington be defeated 3 times.
But do we need to do a statewide TDR? If it was something that was only as we are thinking of purchasing farms as a county, we just make our own decision.
Right. That's what they want.
Would we not set that up as part of our program?
It would be however
they don't want this. I mean, they could do this. It's like
certainly something that just needs to be
right.
Anything else we've got? They
changed their mind. Right. That's what I can't support.
Anything from the public? Anything, John?
I was going to say several things, but then Brad Shockley hit on each and every bullet item that I had to say. The only thing I would highlight is on that boulevard entrance design, that arose out of initiatives first by Ms. Fogarty and then carried through by Mr. Haggerty in terms of finalizing that. What we are going to be doing in that area is incorporating some architectural walls and other features to kind of blend in some historical data we've been able to gather from DLDOT, which did a lot of work in this area as part of their Boyd's Corner project, some of the history of this corner as one of the first commercial corners in the area. So we're going to be adding those features into that entrance design as well. Beyond that, Brad literally had each of the three bullet points, including the comments that I was going to make for Mr. Weiner's behalf in his presentation. So unless there's questions, I don't need to say anything more.
Does the council person, representative, want to say anything on this?
He's out of town. He did say that he received information on the changes to the plan from Mr. Tracy.
Will there be an amusement park there?
Anything else?
Interconnectivity, sidewalks.
I just have a minute with council because this is, I want to emphasize a point about what something that's coming up in your future. So this plan started out a long time ago and then has been in the grinder for a very long time as well. And in 2012, you as a body voted for this, I think 9-2, voted for this rezoning. That rezoning carried with it a general conformance requirement for it. That's why we were, when we made some of the suggested changes, we were trying to keep the general conformity of the plan in place. All we added was a connector to the one side and then really worked on that entrance piece a little bit, moved the buildings a little bit, and reduced, didn't increase the size. So we believe that's in general conformity. What you don't see in this one is some of the architectural renderings and elevations that you have previously seen. So great story for why to have guiding principles, great story for why to, as you're coming up on some of the new UDC improvements that we have, that are starting to make their way through and make it to this legislative process. We didn't have any handles or hammers of any strength to be able to require that. We did ask the applicant to give us some architectural renderings. They did not. And we have no they had no obligation, you know, to do that. So that is the difference between some of the projects you have seen where we got involved early, the more recent rezoning activities, and ones that were coming out of the past, and the kind of products that you're going to see. And what we hope for in the future is when we're showing you this picture back at the rezoning piece, we actually pulled the tape today to go back and look and see if there was any, if anybody had made any recommendations or anybody made any offerings to say we're going to do this, this, and this, and there was nothing there. So the zoning's in place. It's just finalizing the plan, and it's a it's really a geometrical issue. But I wanted to point that out as some of the differences. This will be one of the last plans you see that's kind of bare bones. So.
I just want to go back to the foreseen commercial component here, what you expect in terms of leasing.
The intent, John Tracy again from Young Conaway, the hopeful main tenant and what the largest building is designed for is for a grocery store. There's none of that in this particular area. The long building to the bottom is first floor retail, second floor office, and then you have the building, the kind of the isolated building up to the top is designed for a bank. The rest is general retail, ideas of neighborhood retail and some restaurants. But there's nobody who signed on to come in here as of yet. Again, this has taken a long time, so there's been some stops and starts, but we aren't there yet.
Anything else? Anything other? Public comment?
Motion to adjourn.
I think this is still on Route 9.
Super fresh.
Yeah, it's still there?
Yeah, no, I'm closing it.
Oh, okay.
Had room for a year.